Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, February 13th, 2016. This is episode 1261. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of super tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to you. Visit NatureBox.com/Twit to get 50% off your first box now. And by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536 if you want to talk high tech with me. I'd love to talk high tech with you. 8888 Ask Leo. Website techilabs.com. Smartphones, smartwatches, but not smart FBI IT department. 16-year-old hacker, I think, has been arrested for dumping the contact information. He's British, a British kid. The contact information of thousands of FBI and Department of Homeland Security employees online. Released him on Monday. He says he has 200 gigabytes more information. And the fun part is how he got access to all of this. Turns out, it was a phone call. Not clever hacking techniques. But the hacker was interviewed by Motherboard, Vice magazine. The data was obtained, the hacker told Motherboard, by first compromising the email account of a Department of Justice employee. He wouldn't elaborate on how that account was accessed in the first place. But I would guess probably something like a spear phishing attack, you know, where you target somebody with something from, let's say, their bank saying, oh, my goodness, we need you to re-log in or something like that. Or please open this document. That's usually how it is, right? Here's a PDF file. On Monday, the hacker used that Department of Justice email account to contact the Motherboard reporter. So once he got the email, then he tried to log into the Department of Justice web portal. That didn't work, so stymied. By strong security, right? No. He called up the department. He says, I called them, told them I was new, and I didn't understand how to get past the login screen. They asked, well, do you have a token? A little token code? He said, no, I don't have that. They said, no problem, just use ours. Oh. This is more often than not the case. So they call it social engineering. And hackers are very good at it, even the 16-year-old kid. They're very good at it because they act stupid. And IT departments are kind of used to kind of users not knowing what's going on. And they just go, oh, yeah, I know how that is. I know how that is. We'll just, here, use this one. And from there, the whole edifice, this whole security edifice falls. So, you know, we spend a lot of time here talking about securing your stuff, using strong passwords, you know, really, really protecting yourself. But if even if you do all that, it doesn't matter if somebody at the IT department or in the customer service department is too friendly. And I still see companies doing things like security questions. You see those, right? Oh, in case you forget. Part of the problem is passwords. They're a terrible idea. And people forget them all the time. In case you forget your password, no problem. Just answer. Here's three, you know, secret questions. Just answer those. And then when you call us on the phone, if you know the answer to those, we'll say, oh, here's your password. This is a terrible system, by the way. And you know, the thing is, it works for sophisticated listeners like you because you're not going to, you know, what was the name of your dog? You're not going to, as Paris Hilton did, put the actual name of your dog. She did. That's how her account got hacked some years ago. See, everybody knew the name of her dog because she's on TV and talks about it. Where were you born? What's your mother's maiden name? These are terrible secret questions because they're not so secret. So sophisticated users provide equally hard-to-remember answers, gibberish answers, which they then put in their password vault, right? So that the answer to the question is not something a bad guy could guess on the phone. Spot? Fido? Oh, I can't remember my first dog's name. Not so hard to come up with that, right? The reason I, you know, I mentioned customer service reps is we know that, for instance, my friend Matt Honan, who's a tech writer, his account got hacked. He had a three-letter Twitter handle, M-A-T, and turns out the kiddies, and mostly, by the way, this is not done by adults. It's well, sometimes it is, but a lot of times it's just done by kids. They really like those three-letter Twitter handles. So they said, we want to get Matt's Twitter account. How can we do that? And they did a very kind of interesting maneuver where they called Amazon. They gave Amazon a new credit card number. They did all sorts of stuff. Then they took the information Amazon gave them and then used that at Apple, got the information from Apple, got the email account, got the Twitter, said, oh, we can't remember our password, Twitter. Would you mail me the password? They mailed it to the Apple email account. Bingo. They got what they wanted. You can read about this. Matt Honan wrote a long, extensive article about how this all happened to him. Poor guy. And the funny thing is, he was, you know, he was using strong passwords. Now, there is one thing you can do and should do wherever possible that helps. It's not a panacea, but everybody should be doing this. And that's turning on something we call two-factor authentication. Really, the whole problem here, whether it's the FBI, IT department, Amazon, Twitter, whatever, is something we call authentication, proving you are who you say you are. That's what you need to do to the bank to get money from them. That's what you do when the police officer pulls you over and you give him the driver's license. Proving who you are is a tough problem on the internet because we can't use photo ID. And truthfully, photo ID isn't all that secure either, is it? As anyone who is under 21 knows, it's easy to get a fake ID. So we need better ways of authenticating ourselves. A password is how we've been doing a terrible system. Really, until recently, in the last 20 years when the internet kind of became popular, we didn't even need passwords, did we? Maybe you remembered your locker number in high school or your phone number. You know, that was the extent of it. Now, you're logging into hundreds of different sites and the experts say, oh, you shouldn't use the same password twice and it should be random and long and, of course, hard to memorize, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the system is so broken. And that's what we're using for authentication. You know, log into your bank. What do? You give them a password. If your bank offers two-factor authentication, this is better. Authentication is a process of one of three things. Something you know, like a password. Something you have, like a digital key fob that generates numbers. Or something you are, like your biometrics, your fingerprint, or your eyeball. Fingerprints are becoming very common. Iris scanning even is starting to come out into the consumer world. I think some Windows phones do it now. So that's a second factor, password plus fingerprint, or password plus that six-digit code that's generated by your authenticator program, right? That's good, because then a bad guy would have to not only get your password, but he'd have to get your authenticator, unless he can call the IT department and said, yeah, I can't figure out how this thing works. And the IT department says, oh, no problem, use this. Then all bets are off. We work so hard to explain security, to help you be more secure, and then things like this happen to an agency that ought to be pretty darn secure, right? 8888 Ask Leo. We could talk about that. We could talk about new phones coming out end of the month, Mobile World Congress. There's going to be new LG G5. People are interested in the new Samsung Galaxy S7. Apple's going to have a new iPhone available March 15th. And there's a new one called Robin that's coming out next week. There's a lot to talk about. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Asked Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call. Just use Skype out to reach us. And when you call, you will be reaching and talking to the lovely and talented Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, dressed all in Stevie Nicks lace today.
I did it again.
No, it's good. I like it. It looks like you've got a full board here. Who should I start with?
Absolutely. Let's go to Detroit, where Bob is having an issue.
Do people still say, let's go to Detroit?
Come on now.
I like Detroit. You know what? Best Greek food ever in Detroit. Well, outside
really?
Of Greece.
And how about the music?
Music scene, Motor City, Coast Motown. That river is beautiful. They got a nice elevated railway in there. It's pretty. I like Detroit. Bob lives there, too. Hi, Bob. That's another reason to go to Detroit.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How you?
Good. You forgot about our hockey team.
And, of course, the Red Wings.
Of course.
Who could forget?
Yeah, Hockey Town. That's for your Chicago list.
Hockey Town. Detroit is north of Canada, though, right?
We sure are.
Okay, just checking. So it's kind of cold in the winter.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too bad.
Not too bad.
Hey, what's your recommendation on a cloud solution for a home user that's a pack rat?
Yeah. So you need a lot of storage. The problem with storing stuff in the cloud, it's not your grandma's attic. It doesn't, you have to upload the stuff. And so it can take a while to do that. And, of course, you have to pay for storage day in, day out, month by month, year by year. So I would be, if you're a pack rat, one of the best things to do would be to think about what you want to store off-site in the cloud, in the internet, and what you want to store locally. And, of course, the stuff that is that you need to be most security-focused on probably should be stored locally. And the largest stuff should be stored locally. So if you've digitized your entire 1984 collection of Cheers VHS tapes and you want to store them in the cloud, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. But so that's really, you could do the math. What is my upstream data speed, from my internet service provider? Not downstream. I think a lot of people say, well, I got 20 megabits internet service. Yeah, but what is the upstream? And then divide that in half, because you can't use 100% of it. And that's how fast it's going to be. And then figure out how much data. And, most people, when they look at, I want to store 4 terabytes in the cloud. Oh, it'll take me 8 months to upload it. Maybe think twice. So what's the cheapest cloud storage? Well, the cheapest is probably from Amazon, of all things. And they have something called Glacier. It's a cloud archive that's very low cost. But the theory is, you should only put stuff on Glacier that you don't want back right away. It's glacially slow, not for upload, but to get your stuff back. It's optimized, this is what Amazon says, optimized for infrequently accessed data where a retrieval time of several hours is suitable. But who cares, right? if it's tough, you know, why you like you're a pack rat. This is your grandma's attic, basically. And you can store tons of stuff there because it costs $0.007 a gigabyte. So that's like 0.7 of a cent per gigabyte per month. So it's fairly cheap. You still have to upload it. And you should really only use it for stuff that you don't want to access regularly because it can get very expensive if you start accessing it. Do you want to have it? Is this for like permanent backup, or is this like stuff that you want?
This is more for, you know, daily or weekly use files.
Yeah, so I wouldn't use this. But this is cheap. It's just that it can add up if you do a lot of retrieval. So this is more for like I'm going to store. We got the entire family of photo archive digitized, and I just want to store it there so it's safe. That's Glacier. Okay, so this is something you want to access on a regular basis. I think, you know, I like Dropbox, to be honest. It's not super secure in this, in one sense only, that Dropbox employees could, in theory, access your stuff. Your encryption password is known to, you know, a small subset of employees, but it's known. And in most cloud sharing services have to do that and have to do it that way to give you the services like the ability to share stuff from it and so forth. But Dropbox is really good. And the total Dropbox cost is not, you know, very high for a lot of storage.
How does it compare to OneDrive?
OneDrive is also very affordable. And the nice thing about OneDrive, even though it's a Microsoft product, is Microsoft has made that work completely cross-platform on iPhone, on OS X, Linux maybe not. So yeah, I like OneDrive a lot. I wonder if I can find a price comparison. I bet you somebody has put this together.
Similar level of security between that and Dropbox?
Yeah, in fact, it might even be more secure than Dropbox. Again, security. Well, as we were talking about it before the break, security can mean several things. And if the employees are not, you know, secure, so I would bet Microsoft's pretty good on this. So there is a site that will do comparison for you between a variety of different storage. I mean, actually, a number of people have done this, including PC Magazine and CNET, two good reviewers. So I'm not sure who the best pricing is. You'll have to shop around for that. But I think here are your choices, probably, right? Microsoft's OneDrive, Dropbox, Apple's iCloud, which is Apple only, Google's Drive, which is cross-platform, and Box. Those are probably the big ones. And I'm trying to find a pricing. I would love to just get one sheet. Well, how much is 200 gigabytes in all five of these? And I don't see anything, but I'm sure there is something out there. What are you inclined to use?
Well, I was thinking OneDrive simply because, you know, I'm Microsoft, and it just does a lot better integration. And
well, if you have a Office 365 subscription, you get a terabyte of storage, which is a lot for free.
Yeah, I don't have that subscription yet. It may be in my future.
Yeah. Well, if you ever thought you'd want it, you know, for $8 a month, you get a Microsoft Office for the home and a terabyte of storage. So then that makes it kind of – that's a nice combination. They used to offer unlimited free storage. That didn't work out so well for them because there's some pigs out there who just started uploading that entire Cheers collection, and they were just using a ton of storage, and Microsoft realized, oh, we can't do this. Another thing that you can do is if photos are a big part of this – there's a lot of free photo storage out there. Amazon Prime subscribers can upload an unlimited number of free photos. Google Photos offers unlimited free storage. Flickr offers a terabyte. So you can get the photos like in three different places for free, and that might actually reduce the amount of other stuff that you had to store there. What kind of stuff is it? Is it documents?
Yeah, it's documents, Word, Excel.
Yeah, those are small. That's not going to be a lot of stuff. That's actually the perfect scenario, right, is uploading documents. They don't take a lot of space. Home Theater next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater guru. Scott,
hello, Leo.
Scott joins us every week. You find him, of course, on his Home Theater Geeks podcast which is at twit.tv/HTG. Little conflict of interest there. That's my podcast network. But that's, we're not going to mention that. Also, he's editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, which is a great place to go for information on home theater. You were backstage at the Grammys, huh?
I was. Yesterday, I got to go backstage down into the bowels of the Staples Center.
Wow.
Where they have a bunch of trucks parked with all the production equipment. You know, there's a truck with the audio and a truck with the video, and they're slinging signals all over the place. In fact, this coming Thursday on my podcast, the Grammys are on Monday, which is kind of odd. You know, normally they're on Sunday, but this year they're on Monday. I think maybe they're trying to get away from having it on Valentine's night. I mean, who's going to watch on Valentine's night? But anyway, it's on Monday.
Monday's when the Oscars used to be. I like Monday.
Yeah.
I think Monday's a good day to have the award shows.
Award shows. Well, yeah. Then we'll see how good the audience is compared to in the last few years when it's been on Sunday.
Mm.
My podcast this Thursday will have the guy named Mike Abbott, who's the audio coordinator for the entire show.
Nice.
Grammy show. So we'll talk about exactly how the audio works and everything. I talked with one of the mixers there. He said they have two stages, so they can set one stage while the other one's being used, you know, and they can be very efficient that way. Each stage has up to 56 instrument and microphone and source signals going into a mixer. Then there are all the RF radio frequency microphones and other stuff that's going into this giant mix board. That they're mixing live. I mean, one of the coolest things about the Grammys, one of the things I really love about it, is that all the musical performances are live. They're actual performances.
Not lip-synced. Oh.
Not lip-synced, not a lot of backing tracks. There are occasionally some pre-recorded backing tracks that are used, but not very many.
It's hard to do live.
It is.
Because especially when you're running around dancing and jumping and that people get out of breath, I think. That takes a lot of training.
Oh. Absolutely. A lot of aerobic fitness, yeah. I would say.
Not to mention the fact that many singers don't sing so well. So.
Well, yeah.
But now that they have live auto-tuning, it's not so much of a... Seriously. It's not... They have live auto-tuning now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Auto-tuning has gotten good enough that it can be done in real time.
Yeah.
Wow. So anyway, I think it's going to be pretty cool. I must say, you know, a lot of the artists and stuff kind of beyond me, but it's okay. I love the Lady Gaga Grammy Intel commercial. Have you seen that? They've started playing that on TV. It's sort of commercial for Intel, I think. And Lady Gaga is there and it's really sort of promoting the Grammys. Did you hear her? By the way, the one thing about the Super Bowl, we were talking about the Super Bowl off air.
I hear it was quite good. In fact, I missed that. I was working.
The Lady Gaga Star Spangled Banner was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. I didn't really care for much else, you know, in the Super Bowl. The commercials were pretty lackluster.
You didn't watch it, I thought. Or you watched, like, highlights.
I TiVo'd it.
You skipped the game and just watched the other stuff.
I skipped the game. Yeah, exactly.
Lip-syncing. Speaking of lip-syncing, I mean, there's another place where you just, I think, well, maybe they don't lip-sync on the Super Bowl. That's an interesting question, actually.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I didn't get the sense that Lady Gaga was lip-syncing.
Oh, she wasn't lip-syncing, no. You can't lip-sync the national anthem.
That's true. Wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah.
If the recording stopped in the middle.
Yeah. There are all sorts of problems with social media.
But the halftime show, you know, I suppose a lot of things could have been lip-synced there.
Yeah.
I was disappointed also that, you know, I'd heard that the L.A. Youth Orchestra was going to perform.
Yeah,
with
I didn't see them.
Kudamel.
You told me they would. I didn't see them. Where were they?
They were backing up Coldplay. They were on the stage, and it was just the string section, and they were just kind of doing a backup thing for Coldplay. And I was going, oh, man, So I was pretty disappointed.
What'd you expect? a Bach cantata? I mean, come on.
Well, there's plenty of classical music that's really exciting.
This is the Super Bowl. This is
Firebird
Suite. You only got 12 minutes.
Anyway.
That's what I want to see at the next Super Bowl.
Yep.
Na, 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 na.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
That's great. Very good. Yeah. You're singing it well. That's the bassoon.
Is that that's not Rite of Spring? That's Firebird Suite.
Rite of Spring.
Okay,
right.
I get confused.
Rite of Spring. You were right. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the Grammys are going to be great. I'm looking forward to that. I always do. They broadcast in 5.1. As far as I know, it's CBS, so it's still 1080i. It's not 4K.
Sports is really interesting in surround sound because, it's weird because you'll be sitting there and you'll hear a beer vendor behind you and a lady screaming over there, and it's kind of extreme maybe. And then they mix up on football. They really mix up the noise. Football is loud.
Yeah.
And I think that's intentional, but there's lots of the announcers are in the center channel and then they're surrounded by.
Well, since macho. I don't watch very much football, I would have expected there to be, the audience ambience, as it's called, in the surround channel.
Now, Grammys will be 5-1, right? I mean, they'll do those in surround. Yeah. That'll sound good. I like watching the Grammys. Right.
I do too. Yeah. I've been a couple times. I actually was able to attend a couple times, and it's very interesting because basically it's a studio audience of 50,000 people.
What? Is it the Kodak Theater? They do the same place as the Oscars?
No, it's at the Staples Center.
Staples Center? Oh, that's bigger, isn't it?
It's big. It's really big. It's where basketball, all kinds of sports.
Where the Lakers play, yeah.
Where the Lakers play, yeah. And it's just 50, 60, 90,000, I don't know, it's many tens of thousands of people in the audience, and they go, okay, everybody's quiet now, we're about to go on the air.
Yeah. If you've never been to the taping of a TV show, mm-hmm. it is a lot of hurry up and wait, and there's a lot of silence, and they say, okay, now go crazy, and then, shut up, okay. Yep. It's very strange. It's a weird experience.
It is.
And not at all like it is at home.
No.
But it's fun for that reason to see it. I would like to. You know what? I'm going to have to write a note to the producers of The X Factor, because I want to see American Idol. I want to see one of those finals. They do those live.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of interesting.
That would be really fun.
You can look for me in the pit. I'll be one of the people waving at the, touch me, touch me, you're a superstar.
That's right.
I could do that very well. So why is that old man down there?
They usually have kind of a pit at the Grammys, too, where there's some people standing and they're jumping
to simulate enthusiasm, yes.
Exactly.
I'll never forget going to see Letterman before he retired.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And you have to go early to the theater. I'm same with Colbert these days. You go early to the theater and line up to get your ticket the day. They're free, but you have to line up. And then they have producers wandering around kind of gauging who's going to be the most enthusiastic. And those people get to sit like right down front.
Up front, right.
And I don't know how, but these guys are well trained. They must have, they recognized me and said, oh, hi, Leo. We're going to put you in the balcony. So if you're in the industry, they put you in the balcony, they put you far away from the stage because they know you're not going to be enthusiastic. You're going to be sitting
on your
hands.
You're not going to be jumping up and down.
Judging. Scott Wilkinson, he's a home theater geek. You can find his podcast, which is very geeky, if you're into this stuff, at twit.tv/HTG. He's also on the AVS forums where he writes regularly, does polls, all sorts of stuff. And he joins us each week to talk about home theater. Grammys are Monday night. Yep. I'll be looking for you, your beard peeping out from behind the curtain. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I think that's Scott.
Oh, look, there I am.
He's down there in the pit.
I snuck in. I'm waving my arms. I'm going crazy.
Would you like to take over for a moment or two?
I would love to. M. Heiss, Mike Heiss, my friend in the chat room, the audio truck they're using is the M3. I think it's called Mobile Music Mix. Anyway, it's the M3 truck that they're using to mix the audio. And they've got, I think it's 168 input board. Very interesting that they've been using Genelec speakers for years in their mixing trucks. And just this year, they switched to M&K. They did a refurb of the truck. And during that refurb, they changed out the speakers. And apparently some of the engineers who have been working on this show for 15, 20 years have always really used and liked M&K speakers in other projects. But then when they get to the Grammys and to this particular truck, it's using Genelecs. And Genelecs are great speakers. Don't get me wrong. I love them. And I asked, well, why did you change them? Well, just because that's what our engineers are otherwise used to. And so we decided to give them what they wanted. So that was that. But anyway, it's a very cool setup. They actually have two almost identical music mixing trucks. And basically during the rehearsals, there's 3 days of rehearsals before the show. And I was there yesterday. It was the first day of rehearsals. And so when each group rehearses, the mixer is in the truck mixing during the rehearsal. And then that's all automated because these mixers are all really computers. And so then they take that automation file and they move it over to the other truck. And the guy can practice sort of making tweaks and changing little bits while the next group is rehearsing. And the person in the other truck is doing that mix. So they're kind of switching around and going back and forth. It's a very efficient and kind of cool workflow. Hey, the Sue the Writer's here. How are you? Good to see you. Beatmaster, any plans to see Deadpool? Ooh, this is a really good question. it's in Dolby Vision. I will probably go to see it. It doesn't sound like my kind of movie, but I mean, it's everybody says it's really funny, and okay, that's cool. And it's kind of raunchy, and okay, well, I'm not a prude. I don't, you know, that doesn't bother me on that level. It's just not appealing to me necessarily. And apparently there's a lot of gore and blood and guts. And
ooh, what
and
that, you talking about?
A Deadpool.
Oh, I want to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. And believe it, soon there will be a Dolby Vision theater in the Bay Area.
Oh, good.
And if, you know, when that happens, you will want to see.
Let me know. Yeah. I want to see HDR.
I will.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. You going to stick around for the top?
You betcha.
All right, Scott. Thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'm here for you. I'm here to do it. And moving on to Matt in Los Angeles. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. I've got an issue with a laptop, an HP laptop. I bought it, and then it got dropped. And
you dropped it on its head.
Yeah. Cracked one of the corners and made the blue screen of death come up for Windows. And it says there's a hard drive problem. The hard drive's damaged. So got a new hard drive and going to put that in. But how do I get the specific installation of Windows 10 back?
It came with Windows 10?
It was on there. It was a refurbished laptop, but...
And it was as long as Windows 10 was on there and authenticated, you shouldn't have a problem. Microsoft will have you have that laptop's particulars in the database. This is something different with Windows 10. In the past, you've needed a serial number to activate it, right?
Yeah.
And if you wish, well, you can't boot it up, so you can't do this. You can. There are programs like Bellarc Advisor that will give you your serial number from a running install of Windows. Of course, if it's not running, it won't work. Some companies, I don't remember if HP does this, Dell does it, will put the serial number on the bottom of the machine.
Right.
However, you don't – you so you bought it used. Did you buy it used from HP or used from somebody else?
Used from Best Buy.
From Best Buy. Well, they're in all likelihood, they're following correct procedures. You know, sometimes – you can get a, you know, you can buy the hole in the wall computer guy, you know, on downtown. Sometimes we'll sell you a computer with a pirated version of Windows on it. That's not unheard of. You know, he buys one copy and cracks it and installs it on everything. If that's the case, you're out of luck. But I don't think that's the case. Best Buy is not going to do that. So that means it was a registered copy of Windows on there. Windows 10 on there, and it's very likely that all you have to do is get the Windows ISO, and you can download that, by the way, from Microsoft.
And okay, I put it on a flash drive, and then...
Yeah, and make you need another computer to do this, obviously, but you can borrow buddies or use your laptop or whatever, but then you make a bootable medium out of it, and you have a blank hard drive in there, so you'll boot to the USB drive, and and then just install it, and you should be good to go. Because it'll say, oh, you know, it calls Microsoft, and Microsoft says, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I recognize this one. This one's okay.
Great.
That's okay. Something new in Windows 10. They just started doing that.
It's even easier than the old days. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
But what it means is you don't own Windows 10, your computer does. So there are some side effects. You can't move it to another computer, for instance, because you don't own it.
Right.
The machine owns the Windows 10. But that's how Microsoft likes it. One machine, one Windows 10. I don't know how you would get the serial number off if you can't boot it.
Yeah.
You might try, before you spend a lot of time with that new hard drive, take the old one out and see if you can boot it on another system. You know, attach it to connectors and see if you can. There are companies like NewerTech sell connectors for laptop drives that'll turn it into a USB drive. They're not intended to be used for long purposes. Not an external enclosure. It's just cables. But it'll let you look at that as if it's a USB drive and maybe see if there's stuff on there. Maybe see if you can pull off the serial number. And if you can, be nice to have that. Best Buy also can probably help you. But my understanding of the way Windows 10 is, Microsoft's doing it now, is Windows 10 is basically, it's not using a serial number. It's using a code generated by the unique parameters of that system.
Right. That makes sense to me. That's how I would have done it.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, and it eliminates the piracy problem because you can't give your copy of Windows to anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of what Microsoft's thinking, I think.
Great, so it puts in basic drivers when I put in that ISO on there.
Yeah, the first thing will happen, so you put, yeah, and you may have to go to HP to download drivers specific to that laptop if Microsoft's not providing them. But normally what happens is you put the ISO in, it boots up in kind of a dumb mode, goes online, immediately updates all the drivers, will also run all the Windows updates, which you should do. And get all the critical patches. And if it's, and then it wouldn't be a bad idea to go to the HP site and download the specific drivers for that hardware, just in case.
Gotcha. All right, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Matt. Yeah, that actually is a better way, isn't it, of doing it? And in fact, unless, you know, in his case, the hard drive's catastrophically damaged, can't be used. But in most cases, you always have a Windows install partition on the hard drive. But now is a good time to make that recovery media. It's always nice to have. And it's really great that Microsoft offers that for download. And you can download it, install it, and not activate it. It'll run for 30 days. It's kind of like a trial version of Windows 10 as well. They're really trying to get this in. Now, somebody's saying, no, I think this is, no, Twisted Mister's saying the HP thing will have the code in the firmware, and that's right. If you bought a copy of Windows 10 in a box, then you might still need the serial number. But nobody does that anymore. Who does that? Patrick in Fallbrook, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Leo. Hey, thanks for all your insight into the world of technology. You've been most helpful in the past for me.
And I'm so glad.
Advice now.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
Hey, so I'm going to be traveling overseas to the country of Ireland next month, and I have some questions about adapting power over there. And I hear you have some experience in that.
I do. It's pretty straightforward. It's easy to understand. There's two things that you have to pay attention to when traveling on power. One is physical. It's just the shape of the plug. Now, more and more, I have to say, I'm seeing plug sockets internationally, universal plug sockets. They look like a happy face. They've got lots of bumps and stuff. And those will take almost any physical plug. The UK has a very strange square prong. One's tilted. It's a weird plug. So physically, you may have to get, depending on where you're going, adapters. If they don't, and if it's in Ireland and you're going to a nice, beautiful old hotels and, you know, bed and breakfasts and inns, probably they're going to have the old style UK plugs. So you're going to want to get adapters. But adapters is not the whole story. The other part of the story is voltage. In the US, we use 120 AC, 120. Around much of the rest of the world is 220 or 240 in some cases, mostly 220. That's twice the voltage. Now, that could be a problem if you have a device that's set for 120. You'll fry it. And in the process, blow a fuse because so much power will be coursing in. So you don't want that. You don't want that. But the good news is most electronics and most chargers are 120-240. And you can look. It's in the fine print. It has to be printed by law on all of these devices. So your laptop brick, the plugins you use for your phone, all of that stuff. Look and see. It should say 120-240 volts. If it's a power strip, if it's a charger, whatever, don't take it if it's just 110. Just don't take it. If you have to take something, then you have to get a transformer which will plug into the Irish sockets. Your stuff will plug into it, and it steps up the voltage to 220. It makes it compatible. But that is wonky. It's not ideal. But the good news is most electronics nowadays will handle 220 to 240. So make sure you check before you go. And I will tell a bad story about myself when we get back after the news, because I didn't. And I learned this lesson. So adapters and transformers, or adapters and plugs that work with the higher voltage. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So as Loquacious asked, and I think I mentioned, I am going to have one of the high top of the food chain audio producers from the Grammys on my podcast this Thursday. So I do hope you will join me for that. Should be very, very interesting. Let's see. Anybody else got any good questions? Tech William and I have been talking about what would it take to get a high-end home theater in the home besides a wheelbarrow full of money. And that's what it takes. That's exactly what it takes. With a wheelbarrow full of money, you can build a really nice home theater. In fact, as he said, there are people who build their entire house around their home theater. And especially if you buy the the Panasonic 152-inch plasma or the Vizio 120-inch reference series, you probably have to build your home theater anyway around that TV. You have to put that in first and then build the house around it or the room around it because it's so big. How are you going to get it into your house? So that's all very interesting. I think I am going to go see Deadpool just because of the high dynamic range, you know, Dolby Vision. I did get to, by the way, just FYI, I was invited to a special theater that Dolby maintains in Hollywood that people come in and studios come in and grade their high dynamic range movies, their Dolby Vision movies in this theater. It's basically a Dolby cinema with only about 70 seats. And it's really nice. And I saw The Revenant, which I walked out in the middle of, to tell you the truth, because it was just too...
Oh, no, you missed the whole thing.
It was too brutal.
Guess what?
What? He survives.
Well, sort of.
Sort of. It was just too brutal.
Oh, it's really brutal. What part did you walk out on? After the bear attack?
I stuck it out through the bear attack, although my eyes were closed most of the time. But it wasn't only just the bear
attack.
It's
really long.
It's really long.
And a lot of heavy breathing, and I'm just glad it wasn't smell-o-vision.
A lot of arrows through people.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. Somebody said to me, well, even though it was Dolby Vision and Atmos sound and blah, 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 and I thought to myself, you know what? That made it more realistic.
Worse. Yeah.
Which made it worse. Yeah. Exactly.
It's an amazing movie. Iñárritu is an amazing director. I'm a big fan. But it is grim.
It's so grim. It was the definition of gritty realism.
Yeah. You feel like you're there, and you wonder why.
You feel like you're there.
Why would anybody be a pioneer, really?
Well, I sure as hell wouldn't.
Yeah.
Visually, it was stunning. I mean, if you get a chance to see it.
The cinematography is amazing.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And in Dolby Vision, in high dynamic range, where those scenes, I remember a few scenes where it's deep twilight, and yet there's a fire, you know, like a bonfire, campfire going.
I'd love to see it in HDR.
Man, man, that looked great. The fire was really bright, and you could still see all the detail in the twilight. A couple other scenes where the director framed it so that the sun was behind the characters as they were talking or something.
Really and gorgeous.
Beautiful.
For sure, I'm going to say for sure a Oscar for Leonardo DiCaprio because he suffered for his art. And the Oscars love that. And then for sure cinematography because that's just amazing cinematography. And I wouldn't be surprised if Best Director for Iñárritu. He won last year too, didn't he?
He did, yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised either, but it was just such an onslaught.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you at all, Lisa.
Lisa
wanted to walk out. I think we sat through it yesterday.
But
I really like his stuff. But yeah,
you were okay.
Well, it's tough. I mean,
it's tough. It was it's hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't do that. We had two nights there at this new theater. The first night was The Revenant in 2D with a 4K image. Looked beautiful, was too hard to watch, and so I left. Yeah. The next night was The Martian in 3D.
Oh, interesting.
Which, yeah, and now you rarely get to see 3D with Dolby Vision, because in the United States anyway, because all but one of the theaters that have Dolby Vision in the United States are AMCs. And AMC, as a chain, as a corporate entity, has decided they're not going to show Dolby Vision content in their Dolby Cinema theaters in 3D.
Huh.
When asked why, I'll have to tell you later.
Oh, what a tease. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Take care.
I won't see you next week.
Right. Next week off. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. You know, anything with a chip in it, I'd love to talk about. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, Skype that'll do it. Because it's a free call. 888-ASK-LEO. So, a couple of stories here in the news I thought I might mention. You know, you can have a nice, secure operating system. Apple's operating system is nice and secure. Like it a lot. For the most part, you don't have to worry about malware because it's got some strong protection. Things like Gatekeeper, and it's got, believe it or not, there's a malware protection built into it. They update it on a regular basis. There's lots of smart stuff in there. It's kind of a next-generation operating system in some respects. But that doesn't mean you're safer, because people can do dumb things to it anyway. A couple of stories in the news this week. One is really kind of depressing. A lot of the software we use, in fact, software I've recommended on the Macintosh, is vulnerable to hijacking and hard to fix. These programs use something called Sparkle Updater, which is a product that software developers buy and build into their software so it can be updated. You know, a lot of programs are self-updating. That's a good thing. That means developers, if they find a problem, can fix it. Unless the problem is in the updater, it's a little harder to fix, apparently. Sparkle has fixed the problem, but any software that uses the Sparkle Updater prior to, let's see which version, I have to look at the version here, I think 1.13.1. So if your program uses an older version, it can be hijacked with a man-in-the-middle attack. I don't know how hard it is to do, but it's possible, because these updaters are not communicating with the update servers over secure channels. They're using a vulnerable version that communicates with an insecure channel, and so somebody could hijack it and put software on your machine. Unfortunately, a VLC player, which is something I recommend a lot of people use, is one of the programs that uses this. So does all my software from MacFun, which is a great company. I love their photo editing software, like Tonality Pro, but they also use Sparkle. There is a command. I guess I'll put this. If you're a Mac user and you can use the terminal, there's a terminal command you can use. You put it into your terminal. It'll tell you which programs use the Sparkle updater, and you can see which ones use the out-of-date Sparkle updater. In my case, many of them. Hey, yuck. Another problem came to us from Adobe. Oh, Adobe. I don't know what's going on at Adobe. Flash and Adobe Reader have always been kind of bug-ridden. Now, this is the Creative Cloud updater, which I use. A lot of people who, if you buy Photoshop or Lightroom or InDesign or any of the Adobe programs, mostly you're going to buy a subscription to the Creative Cloud. That's kind of how Adobe sells it. But Adobe recently issued an update to its Creative Cloud service that deletes that deletes the alphabetically highest name file in your root folder. Just deletes it. Boom, bong, gone. And it's not anything to do with Adobe, this this alphabetically high file. The reason we found out is because of Backblaze, which makes a backup service. Backblaze relies on data stored in a hidden folder in your root directory called .bzvol. And on many Mac users, that's the alphabetically, because of the dot and then the B. Dot A would be higher. But because of dot B, that's for many Mac users, the highest alphabetically, the, you know, sorts first in the list. And by deleting that, so people updated Adobe Creative Cloud, it transparently, automatically, without warning, deleted that file, actually that folder, and broke Backblaze. And Backblaze found out because they got a lot of people going, what's going on? They figured it out. Backblaze said this caused a lot of our customers to freak out. So it's whatever is highest alphabetically. And one fix would be to put a really high, like Backblaze said, if you created something, a folder called .adobe, don't delete my bzvol, for instance. Better yet would be a .aaaaaaa. It will delete that instead. or don't install the update. Maybe too late. If you did, don't log in. What? That's the fix. Adobe apparently is working on fixing that bug. What the what? So you can have a completely secure operating system, but humans, this is humans. This is a Mac-only problem. Both of those are Mac-only problems. And the reason I mention it is not to slam the Mac, because it's not Apple's fault. It's just that, you know, you can make it, you can do as good a job as you possibly can, and still, humans, what are you going to do? Sunana in Encinitas, California is next. Hi, Sunana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. Leo, I'm going to be going to Iceland and Germany and Switzerland and the Dolomites in May.
Are you hiking on all those places?
No, probably not. We might do a couple hikes.
Sounds wonderful.
We're going to be renting a car and driving into all the little cute little places.
And how did Iceland sneak in there? Are you going Icelandic Airlines?
We are. And, you know, you get to do
a free stopover. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm taking advantage of the free stopover in Iceland.
I hope you're bringing a good camera, because this is...
We are. My boyfriend's a photographer,
good.
So he's bringing his good camera.
Photographic heaven.
My question is, what do you recommend in terms of getting data for GPS and booking Airbnbs and stuff? Because I looked into Verizon, and it's very expensive.
It is, isn't it?
Like 100 megabytes and...
Here's the issue. It's something called data roaming. You have a price in the United States, but as soon as you go outside the United States, Verizon and Sprint and AT&T and T-Mobile all have to use somebody else's network.
Right.
And those companies charge them a lot of money. And in return, Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile and Sprint will charge you a lot of money. Now, the good news is both Sprint and T-Mobile started this. Sprint just recently added this, have international plans that give you free unlimited data at a slower speed. So one way to solve this is if you're a T-Mobile or Sprint customer, you know, and check to make sure that it works with your plan and everything. But as far as I can tell, you all get free text, unlimited texting, which is very useful, and free slow unlimited data. And then it's 20 cents a minute for phone calls. So it's a good deal without doing anything. Otherwise, you have to buy an international package. And as you quite rightly point out, it's pricey. So another choice you have, and the problem is you're going to a very disparate group of countries. Germany, Switzerland is easy because you can either get a SIM card there and put it in your phone, or better yet, and this is what we did, is rent like a MiFi, one of those little credit card wireless devices. It gives you Wi-Fi access via the 3G or LTE network. Those are usually fairly inexpensive if you get it in a country where it works everywhere. It will work probably everywhere. I don't know about Iceland, but you'll have to check.
I have one of those. Could I just get it to work there?
Yeah, you'd need to get a SIM.
One I don't really use anymore.
Yeah, perfect. Get a SIM from a country. What you want? Here, go to this wiki site, prepaid with data, Actually, just Google prepaid with data because it's prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. But if you Google prepaid with data, you'll find all the information country by country and probably can find something that'll work in all the countries you're visiting. And then turn off data roaming. You don't want that to happen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by those good folks at Epson, the makers of the Epson EcoTank printer. I love my EcoTank. Actually, I shouldn't say mine. It's Lisa's. Lisa's EcoTank. It was really easy to set up. It's based on the same precision core technology as mine. I have the Workforce Pro in my office. But it has one thing that is so cool. Instead of cartridges, it has a tank. A tank with enough ink to print for 2 years. This is a revolution. This is something I think Epson is to be praised for doing the right thing for its customers. No more running out of ink during a print job. You know, on my printer, I'll have two or three sets of cartridges ready at all times. But with Lisa's printer, we don't have that. We don't have to worry about it. It comes with enough ink. This is the EcoTank to print 8,500 color pages. That's about 50 ink cartridges worth. And if you when you run out of ink in a couple of years, you replace it with low-cost ink replacement bottles. It's affordable. It's economical. And you still get the great precision core technology. It's amazing. High speed. I mean, like seconds per page. Vivid colors. Laser quality black text. And these are all in one, so they have auto two-sided printer, a 30-page auto document feeder. And because they're wireless, it's easy to print from your phone or your tablet. Supports all the protocols. I love that, too. All EcoTank printers, whatever size you get, from the home to the office, deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value with ultra-low-cost ink replacement bottles or packs for the big one. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. Visit the website. Find out more. Epson.com/EcoTank. They also have a list of retailers that sell the EcoTank printer. Transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's Epson, EPSON.com/EcoTank. We thank them so much for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Somebody in our chat room was talking about data charges overseas. Wow. San Mateo said, I ran up over $500 in charges the first day in Italy because I used GPS navigation to get from the airport to the hotel 3 hours away. Cost him $500. So the key, again, the thing that costs so much is using a third-party data service instead of your phone company's data service while you're traveling. It's called data roaming. You know, same thing with voice, right? You have voice roaming where you're in Germany. They don't have Sprint. So you'll use Vodafone or Deutsche Telekom or some German carrier, and then the German carrier charges your company back and your company charges you back. And it can be really expensive. We first started hearing about this with iPhones in the earliest days of iPhones. People hadn't really thought about it when, with the dumb phone, you know, a standard smartphone, or not feature phone, I guess they call them. They're dumb phones. Because you weren't using data or weren't using much. You were worried about the cost of phone calls, and that was, you know, dollars per minute. But one would be careful not to make long phone calls. And texting, as that came up, that ended up being pretty expensive, too. So you'd be careful not to send texts. And incoming calls, if you answer them, and incoming texts, whether or not you answer them, those could cost you money. So people were a little cautious. But when people first brought iPhones to Europe from the United States and were getting $10,000 data bills, eyes popped open. And that's because the iPhone is a computer, and it's using data all the time. It's checking mail. You know, it's checking in all the time. It's doing stuff in the background. So the only way to protect yourself, and it's actually very simple, is turn off. There's a setting on all phones called data roaming. And that's the problem. Not even data, just data roaming. If you want to be extra cautious, just turn off cellular data entirely. either one has the same effect. It means you won't, your phone will say, oh, I need to check the mail. Oh, wait a minute. I don't see a native network. I see a, Deutsche Telekom, and I'm not allowed to use that. And that's good. That's what you want. But what you also would love, I think, as you travel around is GPS nav. It's really great if you're wandering in a new city and you've never been there before and you don't worry about getting lost because you know you can fire up your smartphone map, say, get me back to the hotel, and it'll tell you how to get back to the hotel. It's wonderful. It changes everything. Or where's a good place to eat around here? Or, where's a hospital? Or call me a cab. Uber works in many of these countries. Get me an Uber. So these are all great, luxury features, but you need data to do that. So how do we get data? Well, of course, you can go to the phone company, AT&T or Sprint or T-Mobile or Verizon, and say, I want to buy some international data. But they tend to charge you a lot for that because they're getting charged a lot, right? And usually it's a scant amount. I think Verizon does it in 100 megabyte increments. The most I've ever purchased ahead of time was from AT&T. I think it was 800 megabytes, and it was like $125. And it's not even a gigabyte. And typically at home, I'll use 3 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes, 5 gigabytes a month. So you can see that would become quite expensive. T-Mobile really reinvented this. They're owned by Deutsche Telekom. They're owned by the German telecom company. So they were able to say, well, we'll do this. We'll give you 2G. And in many cases, by the way, it's faster, 3G data for free, unlimited, and texting, might as well. You only pay for phone calls, and if you want higher speed data. And they do, by the way, try to upsell you. Every once in a while, you get a text saying, this could be a lot faster if you just spend some money on faster data. And I tried it, and it was faster, but not so much so that in many cases now, and I bet this is the same with Sprint. Sprint's recently offered the same feature. It's totally usable for those things that you want to do. And remember, Wi-Fi is everywhere, and Wi-Fi costs you nothing. So use the Wi-Fi before you go out of the hotel. Download the Google Maps. You can do that now. You can get them offline so the map data won't be coming off the server. Things like that. That'll save you a lot of money. And you can leave data roaming off until you need it. Like, I'm lost. The map doesn't say where I am. Turn on data roaming, and then it's nice. They also, both Sprint and T-Mobile, offer 20-cent a minute phone calls to their customers overseas. Now, it's not in every country, so you have to check and make sure it's in the countries you're visiting, etc. But it's very valuable. But you really got to be careful. And the suggestion I made to our caller was the other thing you can do, which is buy local data. And it's changing in Europe now. The EU has made a rule that data has to go across borders, so it'll be a lot easier going forward. I think that happens this spring. Going forward, it'll be a lot easier to buy one SIM card that you put in your phone. Now, that's going to change your phone number, but it will give you local data. Pay as you go, usually. Or get one of those MiFi cards, one of those little cards that gets their data from the 3 or 4G network and then gives you Wi-Fi. That's a great way to go because one card can serve you and your husband and it makes it easy. You got Wi-Fi. You just turn off international data. You don't need it anymore. Turn off data roaming. Turn off cellular data and just use the Wi-Fi. And that all the data will be coming from that credit card. The only negative is battery life is probably not all day. And you should shop around because there's different prices. And you want to buy it from somebody that's going to be in as many countries as possible that you're going to be in. But it works really well. And as I said, my reference is a wiki that is fabulous called Prepaid with Data. We have a link in the show notes. In fact, everything I talk about, everything I mention, that's at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Let's go to Fort Myers, Florida. Barry's next. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Pleasure to talk to you. I've been listening since 1993.
Wow.
I really appreciate your content and your company. It's been great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's nice to keep you company.
I just moved into a condo. All 5 rooms are wired with Cat 5 cable.
Nice.
And it all runs back to a nice little closet. The previous owner never used it, and I'd like to start using it.
Yeah.
Right now I'm just using a Wi-Fi router.
Perfect.
What do I have to buy to make that work?
You have to buy something that connects it to the internet. So in the closet, what do you just have, like Ethernet cables just dangling?
Well, the the five cables are back there,
yeah.
And the optical network terminal is there for my fiber.
Great.
And there's a jack on the fiber.
There's a single jack. Wi-Fi. Right, there's a single jack. So what you need is a switch or even a hub. The single jack will plug into that. Best to get a switch. Actually, now, does the fiber's a router, right?
Yes. Well,
maybe not. Maybe your Wi-Fi.
Sure.
Maybe your Wi-Fi access point is a router. So you need a router because you're getting one internet address from your internet service provider, but you need one for every computer on the network. So okay. A router, a simple, inexpensive wired router would do it, or you could probably have extra ports on your Wi-Fi router.
Okay.
Could just, if there's enough ports on the back of your Wi-Fi router, just plug in those Ethernet cables into the back of that. Okay. You need something that's going to say, okay, I'm going to give everybody an address. And that's what a router does. If your Wi-Fi router doesn't do that, just get another. Actually, the easiest thing to do is get a hub that goes to your Wi-Fi router and then plug those Ethernets into that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. Don't go away. I'm going to talk some more to you. Sorry, I had to take a break there. So I said that fast, but the idea is you already have a Wi-Fi router, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's plugged into the fiber. If the Wi-Fi router has a Ethernet port on the back of it, which it almost certainly does,
yep.
You can get a hub, which basically is just a dumb box. You plug the Wi-Fi router into it, and then if it's a 5-port hub, you can plug five more Ethernet.
Would it be okay to have the public facing IP address coming out of all five of the jacks, one in each room, and then plug routers into those?
No.
No way, huh?
Well, it's not desirable, and you don't probably, depends on what you get from the internet service provider. Typically, they'll give you one.
Right.
And if you want more than one public-facing IP address, you pay for it.
Well, I meant that it would be the same one in each room.
Well, that's what a router does.
Okay.
So that's, and the router could be in, you can do it any way you want. You can have the router be in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, every single port will be routed from the central router. They'll all have unique individual internal addresses, 192.168.1.2.3.4, like that.
Gotcha.
And that will be their internal address. Now, if you want to make a server on one of them, you want it to be public-facing, then you have to do some voodoo with the router and tell the router. For instance, I have a Minecraft server on one of my computers inside my house. Now, that computer has a local address, but what I do is I tell the router, if any data comes for the Minecraft server, send it to that one. That's called port forwarding.
Oh, okay.
So is that what you want to do? You want to put a server in there? Why do you want a public-facing address on one of these?
Well, it actually doesn't have to be. I probably misstated that. I think the only thing I'd like to do is have one of them be segregated, like you've been talking about.
Oh,
now.
Right.
For my Internet of Things stuff.
Oh, gosh, you're smart. So now, depending on how hardcore you want to get, you know, Steve says you need three routers to do this. They can all be in the closet, by the way.
Ooh.
And they're cheap, so this isn't a bad way to set it up.
Okay.
One router's connected to your fiber. That could be your current Wi-Fi access point.
Mm-hmm.
Then it has, coming out of it, two different routers, a public one and a private one. And they can also be Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of convoluted, but the idea is that the Internet of Things is on a router that cannot then cross, can't cross the brain-blood barrier between the public, you know, the Internet of Things router and your internal stuff.
Right.
Because they're separate on the central router, the hub router. I think Steve documents it on grc.com.
I think he does, too.
It's crazy. If you really want to do that, you can. I think that's overkill. You could also do it with a smart switch where you could say, this traffic goes here, this traffic goes here.
Okay.
This is a complicated thing.
Well, I'm retired, so I have the time.
It's fun. Well, in that case, do it. Because you know what? Routers are cheap.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Yeah, routers are cheap. And because it's Internet of Things, that one has to be Wi-Fi, right? Because most of those guys don't have hardwire.
True. Very true.
So you're going to have, you probably want to keep your existing Wi-Fi router, get a second one, and get a wired router to be the hub. Get an Asus. The Asus routers are so smart. And then the two, then you'll have the two Wi-Fi. So you'll have the fiber coming into the wired router. That's, you're going to buy that. One, the public router is still yours. You don't have to change anything. It's getting, it's going off of that. And then the IoT router is a new Wi-Fi router coming off of the,
okay,
the hardwired router. That would be how I would do it. Because you don't need three Wi-Fi routers, just two.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the help, and I appreciate all your content. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Thanks. I'm glad you listen to Security Now, too.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, Barry.
Bye, Leo.
Well, look who's here. Johnny Jett, the world traveler. It looks like you're still home.
I'm still home.
Wow, this is a unique, I think a record, 3 weeks at home for Johnny Jett.
Well, it's actually been about 2 weeks. I think I just caught me on the end.
Oh, you had just arrived. Okay.
I leave tomorrow. I'm taking my dad to the Delray Beach Tennis Open.
Oh, fun.
So we'll be in Florida for a few days.
Florida, yeah. And I bet he'll play the ponies a little bit there. I know you like to.
Oh, that's what he loves to do, actually. That's where he is right now. I just dropped him off at the newsstand so he could pick up one of those racing forms.
I love it. It's nice to have a hobby.
For sure.
Yeah.
That guy's 87 years old.
What the heck, you know? Let him, anything he wants to do, it's fine.
But next week, by the way, I'm going to be on a plane to Washington, D.C.
Oh,
so
nice.
On Saturday, I'm speaking at the travel show on Sunday, so I could do the this after that.
Okay, whatever. Okay, you know what? I love it that you jump around. You appear at different times at different places. We never know because he's the man who travels. He's a traveling man.
I try. And speaking about traveling, did you see that email I sent you this week about your Anthem of the Seas trip?
Yeah, everybody sent me that. So I was on this lovely cruise ship, giant 5,000-person cruise ship in December and early January. It was a New Year's cruise. It was wonderful to the Caribbean. Well, the same ship, same exact itinerary, got caught in a little squall off the Carolinas. 70-foot seas.
Well, they weren't 70. They were 31.
Oh, well, that's nothing. What are these guys complaining about?
No, the thing is, it's hurricane-force winds, though.
Yeah, 70-mile-an-hour winds. And the seas were pretty high because I saw somebody who was on the eighth floor. That's 80 feet above the water line. And the waves hit his window. So maybe the waves weren't that high, but something was going up there.
Well, you know, I could have been – the story I read was 31. But
yeah,
still,
maybe. But see, the boat goes in a trough and it's tilting a little bit and a 30-foot sea could still hit the eighth floor.
I love cruising, but that itinerary I have no desire to do. I'd rather go, you know – island to island instead of just, you know, a long time at sea.
Yeah, I've never been in a storm like that, but many of the boats I've been on have. I mean, these boats are made to... In fact, I remember we took a tour of the bridge on the Anthem, and I asked the first officer, I said, you know, on the sea trials, you guys tilt it pretty far, right? He said, yeah, we use the stabilizers to get a 40 or 50 degree list on this thing to make sure it's seaworthy. So that was the boat was probably never a risk. On the other hand... It's basically a floating mall, so everything inside was rattling around quite a bit.
For sure.
And they did lock the passengers in their cabins, just for safety's sake. But it was not at risk of sinking.
Right. But still, I would not want to be on that thing.
Well, it would be pretty your tummy might get a little upset.
Yeah.
It's an adventure. Think of it that way.
Well, speaking about tummies getting sick, here's a website for you. It's called the Bed Bug Registry.
Yeah, I would like
actually,
to.
Actually,
okay, you know what? I need this.
Take out the "the." So
just bedbugregistry.com.
It's actually been around since 2006. But since then, you know, they have collected almost 20,000 reports in 12,000 locations. So I am not worried about bed bugs. I've actually never even come across them. And I spend, you know, 250 nights or 300 in hotels nights. You know, fortunately, I'm staying in nice hotels. But still, the one time I did... you know, come across them was in a Hong Kong foot parlor, massage parlor for getting your feet done. And all of a sudden, Natalie and I got up, we're like, what's on our back?
You were itchy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Oh, I don't even like to talk about it. It makes me itchy just to talk about these things.
I get people emailing me all the time about bug bugs. They're always worried about them. I think it's blown out of proportion. But listen, if you are worried, you know, you can log on to here and see if the hotel that you're staying in has ever had any reports of it. Or if, God forbid, you know, you do find a hotel that does have it, you can, you know, report them so other people can see it.
Looks like they have an app, too. This is nice. Bedbugregistry.com.
Yes.
If you're worried. But remember, this could make you nervous. Could give you worry where none exists.
Don't be worried. But and by the way, it's only good for U.S., Canada, and the U.K.
Okay. Good. That's a very handy one to have.
Okay. So here's a new app. It's called Spot Hero.
Spot Hero.
So I actually haven't used this yet, but I had a bunch of friends tell me about it. So these guys, I don't.
Oh, I love this.
It's for parking, for find the best parking in 16 cities. And supposedly they negotiate up to 50% off than, you know, drive up rates.
Ah.
So they're in the major cities in the U.S. And, you know, so give it a shot. I was using Best Parking, although I don't really park my car very often. I don't drive it very often.
And you've also mentioned the valet service, Lux, right?
Yes.
And that's if you're in the city, it's Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York, I think. But if you're in those cities, they come to you on little scooters and they take your car.
Did you try it?
No. I will. I have an account. I even have because I use Silver Car. I have like a certificate. Yep. But I haven't had occasion because I stay out of the big cities. I like to park in front.
Well, when I go to the big cities, I actually just, you know, I take public transportation.
Yeah.
And speaking of the big cities, I actually might be speaking at the San Jose Bay Area Travel Show in a few weeks. So
you've been doing a lot of that. That's great.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to speak and make some money and also, you know, share with all my travel tips. And speaking of tips, I do have a tip for you. I always do a tip of the week.
Yes.
The most popular one this week was cover the TV remote with either a plastic bag or a shower cap. You know, if you forget to bring one from home, you can, you know, usually the hotel will have a shower
cap. Or a dental dam.
Well, you know.
Why? For germs?
Yeah, for germs.
Don't you bring Clorox or Lysol wipes with you as you travel?
Yeah, the Clorox wipes, but, you know, not everyone remembers it. But some people even say that's not even enough. That's how dirty this thing is.
What?
So if you're paranoid, which I know some people are, I haven't. But I've had a friend who was so paranoid that she forgot her wipes, her plastic bag, and she couldn't find a shower cap. So guess what she used?
I don't know what. A sock?
She went into the
Okay, I can understand what she used. Okay, you don't have to go any farther. she found a product. But let me ask you this. Have you ever, I mean, talking about overblown concerns, have you ever become sick from a hotel TV remote?
Well, I don't know. I mean, but, you know, people have done tests on that. I've seen these, you know, different tests, and they find
it's good for you. It builds up your immune system. You know, you can't.
Not stuff on there. And I watch people on planes all the time. They're blowing their nose. They're
Johnny,
hacking.
Let me just tell you this. It's Valentine's Day coming up. Everybody's going to be kissing. Every time you kiss, 80 million bacteria are exchanged. And that's a good thing. It's building your immune system. Don't worry. Well,
that's what my dad says.
Fear not.
Although he didn't use that example.
Howard Hughes used to walk around in Kleenex boxes. You can go too far.
Yeah.
Don't become Howard Hughes.
All right.
Kiss somebody tomorrow for me.
You sound like my dad.
And look, and how old is your dad?
87.
I think he knows something.
He does. All right. Forget about that tip.
That's a good tip. I mean, if you think about it, that's probably not something that the hotel maids are cleaning. They're not wiping down the surfaces with Clorox.
No, they're definitely not. Yeah. And especially on cruise ships, by the way, you know, when you're in confined spaces like that.
I know. Well, that's why they have Purell everywhere, right? I think they have Purell in the shower heads. No? Okay. Johnny Jett. He's at johnnyjett.com. That's his website. You can subscribe to his free newsletter. Lots of travel tips. Great stuff. I mean, this guy is the guy. You are now the guy for travel. We're going to call you the travel guy. You also find him on Twitter, at Johnny Jett, and on Instagram as Johnny Jett. Thank you, Johnny. Safe trip.
Thank you.
We'll
take care.
Next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. If you've got a question, want to talk high tech, that's what I'm here for. The old geek is on the line from the Bronx. Hello, old geek.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, old geek.
Talk to you again.
From one old geek to another.
Hour and 38.
Who's keeping track?
Glad I'm not on roaming.
Yeah, it's a little. I know it takes a long time because You know what? I talk too much. I'm gonna stop talking so much.
No, I'll be brief. I hope. basically, I got an email from my sister-in-law, who's advising me about an old issue. She finally got around to sending this email about the Flash apps. Flash apps a couple of years ago were being exposed as being malware and full of opportunities for the bad guys.
Yeah, this is okay. So this is probably a case of having a kernel of truth in it. Maybe there was one bad flashlight app. You know, another one is sometimes you get malware in the wallpaper apps. These are on Android. But there's only a kernel of truth. It's not something you should generally be worried about. Both Apple and Google scan all apps for malware, and they're pretty good at keeping malware out of the store. And here's the best news of all. Both Android and iOS phones now have flashlights built in to the settings. So in the quick settings on an iOS phone or an Android phone, almost always there's a button that says flashlight. And then so you don't need an app. But the truth is, I wouldn't worry so much about flashlight apps or any apps in general. Are you talking about iOS? Or are you talking about Android? iPhones?
No, they gave me a clean bill of health, Apple's own.
Yeah. But, you know, this. First of all, don't some of these email threads, especially the scare ones, spread like wildfire, and they're often either incorrect or overblown. In this case, maybe there's a kernel of truth in it. Maybe one flashlight app once had malware in it, but I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, I'm not. I revisited just out of curiosity.
Yeah, tell your sister, don't worry about it. You're safe now. You're safe now. Nothing. Yeah. See, anything with malware on it gets quickly discovered and killed, deleted from the store. And if it's really bad, both Apple and Android have a kill switch in the operating system that they actually delete the app from your phone. And they have both used it from, you know, and rarely, but an occasion if these apps are a problem. I would not worry, old geek. There are far worse problems out there, but the advice is good, which is be careful where you get your software from.
They're saying that you should probably, because of the worms that it can foster, to do resets and, backups and resets.
Actually, there is an interesting... I should probably not mention this bug, but there is an interesting bug that will brick some phones. I don't know if I should mention this. Maybe I shouldn't mention it. Should I? Chat room is this. Should I mention this? If you set the date to January 1st, 1970, on some phones, I won't say which. No, I should say, because then people will do it on iPhones. I mean, they'll do it just to test. Don't do it on an iPhone. January 1st, 1970 is a magic date. It's the date, it's the origin date for Unix. It's when Unix, the operating system, was invented at Bell Labs, AT&T Bell Labs, roughly, late 1969. So they decided that the Unix epoch should begin 1170. And all Unix time internally is handled as the number of seconds since January 1st, 1970. There's a flaw in iPhones that if you change the date on the iPhone, which is not easy, by the way, because you have a little scroll wheel. You have to scroll back to 1970. And then reboot your device, you'll brick your phone. Don't do it. It apparently affects all 64-bit iOS devices, iPhone 5S, iPad Air, iPad Mini 2, and anything later, including the latest 6S and 6S Plus. It, I'm sure, has to do with the fact that Unix began in January 1970. If I had an iPhone that I didn't need, I would try it. But I am not going to try this, and you should not. And I hesitate even to mention it, except it's out there. It's kind of this was discovered recently. It's from 4chan, of course, on Thursday. And I guess the problem is that the guy who put up the post, and this is why I don't forward emails. In the post, he said, oh, there's a cool iOS Easter egg. If you set your phone back to 1970, January 1st, 1970, it'll put a retro Apple logo on your display. No. No, it won't. It'll break your phone. Now, it shouldn't break your phone. The way to fix it, if you do this or somebody does it to you, is to just leave your phone on until the battery dies. And then apparently the phone can be started. You can't remove a battery from an iPhone, otherwise that would be the fix, but you can't. I mean, I guess you could if you were really anxious and you were willing to break your phone. Crazy! Don't fall for it if you see it in an email anyway. And I guess this is being shared quite widely, so I'm always reluctant. You know, there's an ethical concern about talking about these things because you don't want to tell somebody how to do it, but at the same time, you do want to warn people not to fall for it. So don't. If you get an email saying, hey, you want to see the old Apple logo on your iPhone? It's kind of a cool Easter egg. Just set your date back to January 1st, 1970. Don't. That's not nothing cool about it. We live in an interesting world, don't we? There are a lot of bad actors, mischievous kids. You know what I think? I think we've raised a generation that doesn't have a lot of empathy for others because they spend so much time in front of screens and playing video games that they never had to, you know, relate to other people very much. And so they lack a little bit. It doesn't take much, a teaspoon of empathy. But that teaspoon of empathy is what keeps people from doing things like this. Like, oh, I'd hate to have anybody brick their phone. They just think it's fun. It's like a video game. I really think this is why you're seeing kind of an uptick of this kind of stuff. Or maybe just because we're all using digital devices with flaws like this. I don't know. I'm sure Apple will fix this. It'd be an easy thing to fix, and I'm sure they will fix it any day now. But until then, don't fall for it. What a world. Let's see. We've got to take a break. News at the top of the hour. Lots of people on hold. But I'll give you the number one more time if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, 8888-ASK-LEO. And don't forget the website. That's where we put all the answers, all the links, even audio and video of the show after the fact, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. It's free, no sign-up. Just go there. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More to come right after this. Hey, our show today, snack time.
Show today brought to you by Nature Box.
I love snack time. Nature Box is the triple A of snacks. When hunger strikes, don't reach for that half-eaten bag of potato chips or go to the vending machine and buy something you know isn't good for you. Get something delicious made with high-quality ingredients you can trust. Trying to eat healthier does not mean giving up flavor. In fact, the healthier I eat, the more I enjoy these great snacks. And by the way, they have vegan, they have non-GMO options, no sugar-added options. They even have gluten-conscious options. 100 unique and tasty snacks like golden apple tea biscuits, sriracha roasted cashews. Here's a new one. Oh, ooh, sticks and stones, roasted nuts with sesame sticks. Oh, I love these. Almonds, cashews, sesame sticks. Oh. And you know what's nice is that you can just have a taste because these are resealable bags, right? So you open them up. Oh, look at those. Oh, look. This looks fabulous. Oh, this is going to be my new favorite. See, they're always adding new snacks. And then just take a little bite. Yeah, that's good. And then seal it right back up. Best of all, these get delivered to your door every month. We have quite a few boxes that come to us every month for our staff. I love NatureBox. Fuel your game with healthy snacks from naturebox.com/twit. Actually, if you go to that site, These are good too. Tomato flavored almonds. See, they're sending me the good stuff now. I said, I want the healthy stuff. Not watermelon mini stars. Ooh. Actually, that's good too. Cranberry medley. Ooh. 50% off your first box. Pick your snacks. NatureBox.com/twit. Go there to get 50% off your first box. NatureBox. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I don't think this looks like a purse. It's a ditty bag. It's a geek bag. See, geeks carry, so I've taken to carrying kind of like a messenger bag. Some people might call it a merce or a man purse, but it's a European carry-all is what that is. But the thing is, geeks love these because they're very convenient, because geeks tend to carry around things like screwdrivers and USB thumb drives. I have my tiny hardware firewall in here so I can safely surf on open Wi-Fi access points. I've got 8,000 keys, you know, headphones. This is my favorite thing, though. I just got this. Oh, I love this. What do you think that... Let me show you a close-up of that, Heather Hammond, so you can take a guess. What do you think that is?
Is it a battery of some sort?
It looks like it, doesn't it? Or maybe a lighter? It's about the size of a Zippo.
It's too short for a credit card, isn't it?
Yeah.
Holder.
This is so awesome. Samsung should give you a hint. It says Samsung.
Oh,
on
I
it.
Couldn't see that.
Yeah.
Tell us, Leo. Tell us.
That is a hard drive.
Wow.
It's a SSD hard drive. This is the Samsung T1. Get ready for this. This holds all my documents from my desktop computer. This is a terabyte of storage the size of a Zippo lighter. Less, thinner, and just weighs a few ounces. And it's USB 3, so I can connect this up to my laptop or my desktop, and it's almost as fast as an internal drive. It's super fast, read and write, because it's an SSD. This is inside is a Samsung EVO 850, which is kind of their top-of-the-line solid-state drive. The thing that's interesting, you can get, they have different sizes. I think there's 128, 250, 500. I got the 1 terabyte. For a terabyte of storage, $380, something like that. So the prices on solid-state drives have just tumbled. I remember 10 years ago, Steve Wozniak coming on, and he had a USB key around his neck. He says, you know what's on there? That's a 2-gig drive. I got everything on that thing. In my purse, I have 164 gig, 132 gig USB key, and a terabyte solid state drive. The nice thing is you carry this around, and every document, everything that I would have on my desktop computer is on there, and I could plug it in any computer and see it. Now, it comes, the way Samsung delivers it, and this is perhaps the only negative on this, $385 for a terabyte. The negative on this is that Samsung has decided to put encryption software on this. Now, that actually makes a lot of sense because if everything's on here and you lose it, you lose. I mean, this is my life on this thing. I'm not crazy about the Samsung encryption software, though. It requires driver installation on a Macintosh. I think so on Windows as well. And when you first plug it in, you only have 128 gigs, and then you have to run the software, unlock the drive, and then you can see the stuff. Sensible, but inconvenient, especially because I can't just plug it in any computer. I need to have it has to be Windows or Mac, and it has to have the driver installed. Now, the driver's on the drive. I guess you can install it, but friends don't take kindly to me installing software from Samsung on their system without asking. So what I did is I installed the software on one computer, unlocked the drive, and then removed it, reformatted the drive, and now it's just... And then if you really... And I think this is a good idea. If you're worried about it, you should use, you know, TrueCrypt or some sort of solid-state or whole drive encryption to protect it, which is probably a very good idea, carrying this around. But the idea that you can have this in your pocket... Now, of course, you can get a terabyte spinning drive for a sixth of the cost. But it's bigger, it's heavier.
This is bus powered. It means it doesn't need to plug into the wall at all. The USB port has enough power to power it. And it reads 450 megabytes per second. And that's nice. Pretty cool little thing. We live in amazing times. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Truth is, you don't need a man purse to carry this because this would fit right there in your shirt pocket or back pocket easily. It's all the other stuff I carry. Robert in Escondido, you're next. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's your little sleep project coming along with Steve?
He's sleeping. I'm not. But he promises me. Steve is our good friend, the host of our Security Now podcast. He's also, like many geeks, an enthusiast. And his latest enthusiasm, as with many folks, is getting a better night's sleep. So he's got a headband, the Zio headband, and he's monitoring his sleep. And he thinks he's figured out why we geeks don't sleep well and how to improve our sleep. So I'm all for it.
Hey, Leo, so check this out. I'm looking for an online storage company or backup that really knows privacy and security and that will not fold under pressure from the government.
Good luck.
We'll fight for my rights.
Good luck. So you want it's like a Dropbox style thing, but you want one where this is what you want. It's called, Steve Gibson calls it Trust No One, or TNO,
yeah.
Where only you can unlock it. That's what you want, right?
Exactly. Something like Spider Oak. I remember
Spider
you guys-
Oak. That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, awesome. Cool.
Yeah, that's exactly the one I'd suggest. You know, Dropbox is not Trust No One. And as long as you know that, I think a Dropbox's convenience is fabulous. And so, and there are certain things Trust No One will not let you do. For instance, share files from your cloud drive. You can't do that because only you can unencrypt it. And
gotcha.
So I think Dropbox's features are great. You just don't store anything on Dropbox that you don't want to keep super private. If you're worried about now, anybody who has servers in the U.S. It doesn't mean that Dropbox has to be nefarious. If they, because they have U.S. servers and they do business, the federal government can subpoena them and say, hey, give us his data. We want to know what Robert's up to. And they have to give it. And as long as they have the key, which they do, they have to unlock it. But Spider Oak can't do that because it's Trust No One. They can get the subpoena. They can say, well, all we can give you is this encrypted blob. Good luck.
Exactly.
There are other ones like that. I use Transporter, a file transporter. That is it's cloud, but it's localized. So I have a transporter at home and at work. They synchronize. They're 3 terabytes each. And then I can use a Dropbox-like software to synchronize with them. That's encrypted in transport. It's also encrypted on the storage. Always better if you're not putting it on the internet. The internet is always a risk because somebody could breach, let's say they breach Spider Oak's servers where your data is stored. If they do that, then a bad guy can at his leisure try to brute force it, you know, fire password after password at it. Now, if you have a good strong passphrase, that'll take them a million years to unencrypt, but you know, nevertheless, it's better if he doesn't have access to it. And by keeping the transporter local, he'd have to come and physically steal my hard drive. So that's another good way to go.
Could you speak on the DSH breach, too, that just happened this past week, too?
Yeah, we were just talking about it at the beginning of the show. You know what we found out? Motherboard found this out. Vice publishes a really great kind of online journal called Motherboard. They interviewed the 16-year-old hacker who did this, who's, by the way, I think been arrested since in the UK. And he said, well, you know, what we did is we sent a spear phishing email to a Department of Justice employee. And he installed the malware, but we weren't able to get through the portal. So we called IT and we said, I'm a new employee here at the Department of Justice and I can't figure out how this portal works. And the IT guy, very helpful, said, oh, yeah, your little login key's not working. Yeah. Well, here, use mine. And got him in.
What an idiot.
Oops. And as a result, tens of thousands of personal contact information for FBI agents and Department of Homeland Security agents have been published online, and there's many hundreds of gigabytes, apparently more. Oops. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oops. You can't touch my stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Another way to use
any cloud storage, including insecure cloud storage, is to use strong encryption before you upload the files. And a lot of people do that pre-internet encryption. You know, use some encryption, scramble it up, then sync it. And that way, even if somebody got your data, they'd have to unencrypt it. Very interesting conundrum. 8888 asks, Leo, how do I store my stuff safely so that I can access it inconveniently and yet make sure that no one else can? And, of course, then there's the issue. Law enforcement says, well, that's not okay because you could be doing bad stuff in there and we can't see into it. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's go back to the phones and Anthony in Los Angeles. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Leo. You are the tech guru, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I was online Thursday night. I have a Vio Windows 10, you know, and walked away from the computer for a couple of minutes. I come back, my screen is black, and it says scanning and repairing the C drive.
Yeah.
I know. I have Carbonite, I have Windows Defender, I ran scans and restored files, but as of right now, the computer is telling me that I'm signed in on a temporary profile.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
And I have no files, even with the Carbonite restore.
Yeah, no, that's right.
We think it's a hard drive issue, but that's why I called.
Yeah, it is, or probably is. Probably not a Windows 10 issue. Windows 10 does have occasional issues, but it sounds like that your home profile, your normal profile, got corrupted. Now, doesn't mean the data is corrupted, but you can't log in to your profile. I presume you've tried to.
I've tried, yeah.
Yeah.
Switch users and all that.
Yeah. No, that means, so that means your home profile got clobbered. Now, it may be just the profile and the data is still there, so don't give up on it.
Okay. How do I get back to my profile?
Well, you probably need another computer. You want to take the hard... Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Yeah. One thing you could do is take the hard drive out of the laptop and examine it from another computer. You'd still need to, in order to get to your files, you'd still need to log in at some way. But if the profile gets corrupted, you won't be able to log into your profile, but the data might still well be there. But it does sound like a hard drive failure.
Okay.
Not full, partial, because you can still get Windows running, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm still on the internet as well.
Right.
So,
the good news is you've got Carbonite, so your data's safe.
Yes.
I would get a new drive in all likelihood. If there are ways to validate the drive. If you happen to have a copy of SpinWrite, you could run it against the drive. Because what probably happened is a few critical sectors went bad. Sectors that are needed to use your profile, to use your home, your login.
Got it.
And that's why I think your data is probably intact. Not that you care because you have a backup. But guess, you know, it wouldn't take very much to make that unusable. And without damaging data, just you couldn't log in.
Yeah.
Now, so what SpinWrite does, and it's the only program I know of that does this, but it's $90. It's more than a new hard drive would be. So it's more of an exercise than anything else. But what SpinWrite does is it goes through each sector by sector. It doesn't care about file system or anything. It just looks at each sector. If it has trouble reading a sector, it'll keep reading it longer than the operating system will. See, the operating system times out. It gives up after a while. It says, I can't read this. But SpinWrite never gives up. And finally, if it ever can get that data off of there, it'll relocate it and mark that sector bad, and you're good to go. And the only side effect will be there'll be slightly less storage on that drive, but the bad sectors will be marked bad and you won't use them ever again. You don't have to worry. Every hard drive comes from the factory with bad sectors. No hard drive's perfect. So when you get a new hard drive, it's been tested. They have a bad sector map that's on the hard drive that tells the operating system, oh, don't use this part. It's kind of messed up. And they allow a certain percentage of the hard drive always. In all hard drives, there's a certain percentage that's unusable that's mapped out, and the hard drive is fine. SpinWrite just adds more sectors to that bad sector table. and continues on. But that's only if you really have to recover that drive. Just go out and get a new drive. They're cheap.
Would you recommend I replace with a solid-state drive?
If you can, yeah. I mean, nowadays, I don't buy a computer that doesn't have a solid-state made.
Yeah.
It makes such a difference.
It's a three-year-old Vio, and it's probably one of the last ones that actually has a CD drive in it.
I'm looking. PC Guy in our chat room has sent me a link to WindowsReport.com, corrupt user profile in Windows 10.
WindowsReport.com.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. And there is apparently a way to fix this, to repair a corrupt user profile. It might be, but in order to do this, you go into safe mode, you're going to do a registry edit, you're going to mess with the registry and blah, blah, blah.
Nothing is ever simple in tech.
Yeah. So this implies that it's a bug, that there is a bug in Windows 10 that can cause this problem. And that may be what you ran into, or it may be a hardware error that you ran into. And that's the problem, is it's hard to decipher.
Yes.
Windows 10 has had a lot of issues along these lines. And I think it's related to the fact that you have to use your Microsoft account on Windows 10. Right? And so the whole thing is kind of activated around that. And Windows won't operate very well or at all if you can't validate it. Well, wait a minute. We can't log you in. Oh, now you can't go to your profile. Weird things seem to be happening with Windows 10. So I can't tell you that it's your hard drive for sure.
Well, you're the second one, though, the person I've talked to that's implied that it might be. So that might be the way to go.
Well, that's, hard drives are the number one cause of problems on all computers. Period.
Right.
That's
right.
The only moving part. That's
right.
The thing that's going to break. And it's going to break. We don't know. It could break in the first month. It could break after 10 years. It could never break. But it is the most likely because it's moving parts. And that's why a solid-state drive is a great choice. It eliminates one of the prime sources of errors.
Well, I will give all your suggestions a try. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, this might be a good time to buy a new hard drive. Three-year-old laptop probably has a SATA 2 or 3 bus, so it has enough bus speed to keep up with a solid-state drive. But even if you had a slower SATA 1 bus on that laptop, you'd notice an improvement because there's no seek time. There's just some real benefits to solid-state. I just don't buy a new computer that doesn't have a solid-state drive. Incidentally, a computer I do regret buying, and I'm sorry, I apologize to you because I've recommended it, is the Microsoft Surface Book. That was it's such a neat design. It was such a nice Windows 10 computer, but Microsoft has had all sorts of power issues with it. I continue to, but my sources tell me that Microsoft's about to ship a fix. So I'm this close. I've been this close for months to returning this thing. I just like it. I love the screen's beautiful. I love the pen. It's just a nice laptop if it would just work right. And apparently, I'm told in the next week, it will. And if it doesn't, I'm bringing it back. I'll let you know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by the great guys at Corning. You know Corning. Everybody knows the name Corning. Of course, Gorilla Glass. They're the kings of glass, aren't they? And what is it that makes fiber work? It's glass, right? Glass fiber. Fiber optic cables are superior to copper cables because they're lighter, they're thinner, they can transfer data for a much longer distance. But historically, people have said, the problem with fiber optic cables is they're fragile. They're glass. You can't bend them. You can't knot them. If you step on them, you got problems. In fact, when we put in our sand, we had fiber optic, and my engineer said, whatever you do, see those orange cables? Don't step on them. Well, these masters of glass have come up with a solution that actually is the most robust solution I've ever seen for fiber optic. These great Corning Thunderbolt and USB 3-dot optical cables are so robust, you can bend them, you can walk on them, you can tie them in a knot, and they keep transmitting. But you don't have to take my word for it. Folks at Corning have given me a little demo kit. I love doing this demo. Here we go. I got a laser, because that's how fiber optics works, right? It's transmitting light pulses down the glass. It's kind of an amazing technology, if you think about it. Now, the way the Corning cables work is they work with USB, which is copper-based, right? And Thunderbolt is copper-based. But the base unit in the cables, and they're not, just little base units, convert the copper signal into fiber optics, and then they send it down the line, and I mean down the line. They can go up to 60 meters. That's 200 feet for Thunderbolt, 165 feet for USB 3. That means you could take that noisy hard drive and put it in the closet 20 feet away, not hear a thing. And the speeds, oh my gosh, 20 gigabits per second for Thunderbolt, 5 gigabits per second for USB 3. No other cable can give you the full throughput of these technologies. And they're 50% thinner, 80% lighter, and they're strong. So here's what we're going to do. I have in my hands, this is a specially made cable using the same fiber material they put in their cables. But it's a little different because this thing on one end has a connector to the laser. So I'm going to connect that up to the laser. Now you see, let me turn on the laser so you can see it's blinking, right? I'm going to put that on here. Okay, that's going to send the light through the fiber optics to the other end. And yeah, you see it's blinking. Be easier to see if it were, the lights were off, but you could see it's blinking. If I take it out, it stops blinking. So that's actually the light from the laser. But now here's something you wouldn't dare do. I'm going to take this cable, and I'm going to tie it in knots. I'm going to tie it in a tight little knot here. Let's do it right now. Ch-ch-ch. Oh, come on. My engineers are saying, stop it. You're going to... Wait a minute. It takes a bending, and it keeps on sending. But that's not all, folks. That's not all. They've given me a very special Corning crimping tool. All right. The first time I did this, I got queasy. But this isn't going to work. This is crazy. Why are they having me do this in their ads? I am taking the cable. I am bending it and jamming it into these tiny holes. Talk about crimping. There's no way the light is going to continue at full speed through this cable. This is not something you do with a fiber optic cable, or is it? Do you think? What do you think? Is it going to still be blinking? Is it still going to? It takes a bending, and it keeps on sending. It's still blinking. Watch, I'll disconnect. There's no tricks here. There's the laser blinking. Nothing's happening. Plug it into the end of the cable. And even though I've knotted it, I've crimped it, I've bent it, it's still working. And by the way, I've done this now a dozen times with this particular cable. So you can trust me. These are robust cables. You're going to love them. Here's what you do. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com. I'm replacing all my USB 3 and Thunderbolt cables with these incredible light, flexible, and long-run high-speed cables. Declutter, move peripherals in another room, improve productivity, increase security for videographers, for anybody who needs maximum throughput. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. And we thank Corning for their support of the Tech Guy. They're just wizards. They're wizards with glass. Everybody do the bad dance. Oh, yeah. Leo Laporte, 8888, Ask Leo. Let's get some more calls in here. Alan in Huntington Beach. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Mr. Laporte. Thank you for taking my call.
Ah, thank you for calling. Imagine how boring the show would be without the calls.
That would be pretty slow.
Terrible, yes.
I've got a problem that you can help me with, and that is, how do I go about finding a reputable and competent tech? I called three different people for a problem I was having, paid over $600.
Isn't that a great question? There's a business here for somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know. In fact, if I wish there were, because I often get calls from people where I say, you know, this is what you need to do, but really it's the kind of thing that you're going to want somebody with some, you know, hardware and some skills to do, but I don't know how to refer you to a good tech because there's so many bad ones.
Boy, that's been my experience. They're expensive and bad.
Well, that's the problem. And it's not just the money you spend, it's the time and the downtime.
Sure.
Because your computer's not working in all this time.
I even tried calling the local colleges, community colleges, to see if maybe somebody from their computer.
That's a good idea.
And people wouldn't give me a call back.
Because they're students. They don't care. You know, we've had, I know there are groups that there are companies that try to do this. We've had some advertisers in the past. None of them have done very well. And I suspect that the problem is it's hard to make good money and it's hard to find good techs. I mean, imagine if you really understand this stuff, you're not going door to door helping people with their computers. you're joining a startup and trying to make a killing.
Sure.
That's the problem. We have this gap. We have this big gap between ability and availability. And I wish there were a good answer out there. There's some various, there's Geek Squad and Nerds on Call, and there's a variety of different groups that do this. I would say Best Buy's Geek Squad, but I've heard some bad stories. Have you tried Geek Squad?
Well, I actually did, and a couple of things happened. The first one was that they originally said that if you didn't buy it from the place that they're connected with, then they won't fix it.
What? No, I didn't. What?
And then I called another one, and they wanted me to pay $30 a month to have them in perpetuity.
Yeah.
And then they would only be able, it was only good to the extent that they could do it remotely, but that if they needed to come out, there would be more.
Right.
That was.
This is where I feel like this is one of the reasons Apple does well, because they at least have the geniuses in the stores.
Right.
And they're well trained. They're effective, and because they're working in a company store, they can get it. They'll get the parts or whatever. They'll get, you know, you can pretty much be sure you're going to get it fixed. It may be expensive, but right. You can be sure you're going to get it fixed. And I think for a lot of us, I just got to get this thing working, and I'm willing to pay what it costs. I just want to know it's going to work. I've had great results at the Apple store. For instance, we had a monitor that wouldn't work, and the guy was very clear. The genius said, well, it could be this, this, or this. If it's this, we're going to try the cheap one first. If it's just this cable that's bad, we'll fix it, and it'll be $137. If it's more than that, we'll call you and we'll let you know. And they did. Lo and behold, they fixed it.
Mm.
And it was a great experience from beginning to end because they informed you. They kept let you know what they were thinking, what they were doing, what they were going to do, how much it would cost up front. Those are all things you're looking for. And you don't look for – a lot of the stores do this. It'll cost you $150 for me to look at it.
Right.
And right. I think that's just the economics of it. So that's why Apple can do it, because they don't have to make money on the repair side. They make money selling the hardware.
Yeah.
And they understand that the business of it, selling hardware at a high price, is you got to make sure you stand behind it. Microsoft should do this with their stuff. They don't.
Well, yeah. And the other thing I'm running into with Microsoft, which is really disturbing, is I've got an older computer with Vista, and now I'm getting these messages all the time saying that Vista is no longer going to be supported.
Right.
And so that forces people to buy another computer, and that's
right.
It seems like an unscrupulous thing to do.
No, it isn't really, because if you think about it, they can't be responsible for, I mean, that's more than 10 years old, that operating system, right? They at some point you have to say, okay, we're not and usually for Microsoft it's more than 10 years old before they give up on something. At some point, they have to do that. I can understand. I'll defend them on that. But you're right. It doesn't mean you got to buy a new computer. The good news is computers are cheaper than ever. And you might next time consider buying a Mac. Many people shouldn't even buy a general-purpose computer. I've said this many times. They should get a tablet or a Chromebook, something simpler that'll do everything they need. But if you've got line-of-business software you need to run, if you need to use, you know, certain, you know, tools that are Windows only, you're going to be buying a Microsoft Windows machine. And a lot of people, that's why they buy it.
Yeah.
Unless you have a compelling reason, however, I would say there are better choices for the home user for sure.
Well, this isn't good news, Mr. LaFleur.
I know. I don't have an answer for you. Now, we have an IT guy. We use a guy up here. We've known for years. He's completely trustworthy. We keep him on retainer. So if you find that guy, especially for your business, that's a great thing. But for a home user, an individual, just trying to get some help, I don't know what the answer is. You did the only thing you can do, which is try a bunch of people.
Right.
And if you find one, hold on to them like they're made of gold.
Well, yeah. I used to have one years ago, but yeah. He ended up getting out of the business. And in the meantime, I called three people, $600, and still no help.
My best guess is it's just not financially viable. It's not a good business.
Mm.
You know, that's my guess. I always think of the shade. There's a shade tree computer mechanic. You know, in the old days of cars, you can't do this anymore, but an old car, a guy could have a little shop out back of the house, shade tree mechanic. He could fix anything.
Sure.
He'd have a greasy jumper, and his hands would be all black, and the guy he just was a genie. There are computer guys like that. You got to find them. They're sitting in a hole in the wall downtown, and you know, very low rent district because they can't make a lot of money, and they probably don't have a big place. And the front window's cluttered with old computers, fly specked software, boxes of video cards nobody's used in years, all that stuff. And there's a guy, he's sitting behind in the back there. He's surrounded by tools and junk and parts. He's probably smoking. He's sitting there. He doesn't have much hair. He's just maybe he's a little heavy set. I don't know. And he's just, yeah, I could fix it. But the problem is, where is that? I want that guy.
Exactly.
But how do you find him? And how do you know he's not a shyster?
Yeah.
I think it's a different world we're living in, and we haven't yet figured this out. And the only company that has, to my knowledge, is Apple. And I think Microsoft has an opportunity as they start to roll out more and more retail locations. They do have a Genius Bar, and I think that's going to be their solution as well. But until then, you know, if you get something from a Chinese manufacturer, you know, Lenovo or Acer or Dell, well, not Dell, but Lenovo or Acer, Asus, they don't have somebody in the U.S. who's going to come over and fix it. They go to third parties that have, you know, middling reputations. We need there is an A-plus certification for IT. If you could find a guy that hung prominently on the wall and was up to date, not filmed over with dust and cigarette smoke, it was an A-plus cert, that might be something that would encourage you. At least the guy's taking the time to learn, to study, and to get us and spent the money to get a certification. Dexter's saying, does he wear a wife beater? Probably. You know, I don't know. It could be one of them T-shirts. I don't know. Probably not. Probably it's a Microsoft Windows 95 T-shirt, and it says "Start me up" on it. I would guess more like that. Hey, guess who's coming up? That guy, Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz. He's going to bring a cool gadget or gizmo for us as we wind up today's Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I'm sitting back and enjoying it. Hey, look who's here. Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer and joins us each week with a gadget or a gizmo. Hi, Dickie D.
Leah, how you doing, pal?
You're looking great.
You are looking good.
Oh, you're
good.
So kind. It's because I'm living on kale.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
You can't. It's radio, so you can't see the face I made, but you can imagine it.
Yeah, yeah. But I noticed a couple of bites out of your microphone, so things must be bad.
No, you know, the doctor said you have to lose weight, and this time he meant it.
Oh, okay.
So, I've been doing pretty good. I've been exercising religiously and all that stuff.
Perfect.
So what do you got for me today?
I have an update of a gadget. I believe we talked about it a little more than 2 years ago, called Smart Charge. Smart Charge. Okay, so the new one is called Smart Charge 2.0. But what this is, a bulb. Looks like a regular 60-watt bulb, but of course it's LED. Put it into a fixture. When the lights go out, you have emergency lighting with a big difference, Leo.
Oh.
It is still controlled by your light switch.
What?
Yes.
How could that work?
It figures out the difference in resistance between when there's power in the line and when there's no power in the line.
Wow.
And what it can do is, what's great about it is,
oh, if I'm
you
buying
have a power,
some of these right now. This is brilliant.
Yeah. So, Leo, if you don't need it on in the room that you're not in, just shut it off. It's not like the others. It'll run for 4 hours and then it's dead. So this way you shut it off when you're not in that room. This is assuming the power is still out. When you go in that room and click it on, the light comes back on again. And you can do that on and off until you exhust the battery.
And you say it's about 4 hours?
It's about 3.5 to 4 hours.
Right.
And the
now, this is on Indiegogo right now.
Yes.
This is not yet a product.
That's right. And, Leo, they are comparatively cheap. When they were in retail, they're going to be $25. Oh. But right now on Indiegogo, they're doing four for $75.
And this is a LED bulb, so this is going to go a long time.
It's an LED bulb, right. And the original one was 350 lumens, and the new one is 650 lumens. So it's almost twice as bright, but the price has stayed the same. Between the Smart Charge regular and the new Smart Charge 2.0.
I'm buying it right now.
Okay.
Seriously, because I could see you.
No, I know.
You put these strategically throughout the house. You got four of them. And you go into a room, it's pitch black because the lights are out. You flip the switch, the light comes on. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that is exactly the use for it. And they have one other new twist on this, which is also good, is it recharges when the light is on. But now, if you want it to recharge with the light off, you flick the switch on and off twice fast. And the bulb gives a quick flash to tell you that, okay, I understand, I'm now in charge mode.
How could it know that? I mean, if there's no power going to it, how does it charge? Because your switch is off.
No, I'm sorry. Once the power comes back.
Oh, then it will.
Right. Well, once the power comes back, it would charge, the old bulb would charge, assuming it was on. But now when the power comes back, if you don't want the bulb on, you flick the on and off switch twice, and the bulb says, okay, I'll charge myself, but I won't put out any light.
Oh, until you but you do have to have it turned on, obviously. Yeah. Because otherwise it's not getting any juice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the power has to be back on for the recharge.
Oh, this is great.
It's pretty neat. Pretty neat.
Now, don't all go buying it, because I don't... they only have...
Let me get my...
I like this. This is great. Now, do you have a lot of power outages in your neck of the woods?
You know what? No. Fortunately, it's pretty good in Manhattan. I mean...
remember, it used... I feel like the whole electrical grid's gotten more reliable. It used to happen.
Absolutely.
I seem to remember we'd have outages every few months. And now I can't remember the last outage.
You know what else has changed? Dennis and I were walking up from the marina the other day, and I saw a car broken down on the side of the road. And I said to Dennis, you know what? I haven't seen a car broken down in years in the city.
Yeah.
I was a kid, every block.
I know. There was always a broken down car somewhere.
Exactly.
Very good.
Yeah.
You know, I have a question for you. You want to hang on for a moment?
Absolutely.
Because we have a caller with something that you can answer. He has five TV monitors. He wants them all to broadcast the same signal. Seems like something you must have a gadget in the place.
Okay.
I don't know. If you don't, but I look around. I'll give you a minute to search the Disneyland archives.
Okay, very good.
Gosh knows, Dick has quite a bit of stuff in there. In fact, I don't even know how you move. He moves quite well. Paul's on the line from Grand Meadow, Minnesota. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Leo.
You're laughing at us when we say, it's 1 degree below zero.
Yeah, about 10 below.
you mock us.
No, I wouldn't do that.
What can we do for you? Dick's still here, and I think this might be something he can help you with.
At our church, we're looking to... broadcast one signal to five TVs have the same simultaneous signal.
A simulcast, sure.
You know what? Wirelessly, if possible.
Ah, okay.
But if not, we would hardwire it.
Dick, what do you think?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, the only thing I'm using here are these little cell units, and all they do is mirror what's on one. I use one so I can see the chat room next to my camera, but actually the computer that has the chat room is on the other side of the room, and it's being sent through a cell.
And they make their kind of repeaters
there. Yes,
for monitors. All right, well, there's one solution. There was a company that did wireless for a long time. They had wireless transceivers TV signals. What was the name of that? It had a kind of funny name.
You know what? I think they had a lot of trouble when everybody went...
Yeah, digital.
Exactly. Oh. And especially if you're trying to send a 1080p signal. I can't remember. Yeah.
Do you want a high def signal?
Yeah, it'd probably be a high def signal.
Oh, okay.
So, Action Tech has one that uses Wi-Fi, and it is high def. Yeah. So, and Action Tech makes decent stuff. It's not cheap. It's almost $200 for one TV, but you could have multiple TVs receiving the same Wi-Fi signal. The advantage of that is, you know, it's not a splitter because it's wireless, so you don't have to worry about having too many TVs on there. Of course, our friends at the Wirecutter, which do a great job of all of this stuff, recommend IO gear. And Dick, I know you've used IO gear for ages.
I have.
And IO Gear has a wireless HD digital kit that transmits 1080p video to a small receiver up to 100 feet away.
And that's cheaper, right?
Yeah. That'd be the one. The Wirecutter is wirecutter.com. They're great. Thewirecutter.com. They're great. And they test them all. So that'd be the one I'd go with, okay?
And you can do multiple TVs with that?
I think so. Yeah, look, read what they say. I think you would just have to have multiple receivers, one for each TV, obviously, right? Because they can all pick up a wireless signal. It's like radio. It doesn't deplete the signal. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks for the call. Thank you, Dick. Leo Laporte.
The Tech Guy.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.